Today is September 2nd, 2026. This is your geopolitics briefing for Macro Observer. In the next 8 to 10 minutes, we'll cover CIA Director John Ratcliffe's secret Moscow trip and what it signals about a new deterrence channel with the Kremlin, the renewed strikes near the Strait of Hormuz that pushed Brent crude above $92 a barrel, and the contradictions inside Washington's own trade policy as tariffs on Canada collide with a beef deal favoring Argentina. On August 25th, a C-17 Globemaster III with a call sign RCH-4555 flew from Riga into Vnukovo Airport outside Moscow. Independent flight trackers caught it before any government confirmed a thing. Aboard was CIA Director John Ratcliffe. The Washington Post, CBS News, and Axios later reported he met senior Russian officials, most likely FSB Director Alexander Bortnikov. The Kremlin's only comment came from spokesman Dmitry Peskov, who called it, dryly, contacts between the security services. The strategic calculus here is that this was not a diplomat's visit. It was an intelligence chief's visit, unannounced, and it required something remarkable. Washington reportedly asked Ukraine to pause strikes on Moscow and St. Petersburg just to keep the flight corridor open. That is not a minor diplomatic favor. That is operational coordination in service of a parallel channel run outside the normal State Department track. Axios reported Ratcliffe came away describing Bortnikov as a constructive player and floated the idea of a Trump-Zelensky-Putin trilateral summit. Analysts characterized this as counterpart-to-counterpart signaling rather than a Putin sit-down, and that distinction matters. Here's the uncomfortable historical echo. In November of 2021, then-CIA Director William Burns delivered a strikingly similar warning to Moscow. It did not prevent the February 2022 invasion. So the operative question for policymakers now is what has actually changed? Is it greater resolve in Washington, harsher implied consequences? Or is it Russian overextension now stretched across both the Ukrainian front and an increasingly entangled Iran relationship? Building on that, the visit is unfolding alongside real financial pressure. Russia's finance minister showed up at the G20 for the first time since 2022, only to be rebuffed by Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, who made clear there's no economic cooperation without a war-ending settlement. Meanwhile, the Senate has already passed, 86-11, a sanctions bill that could impose tariffs up to 100% on buyers of Russian oil and gas, aimed squarely at a Russian budget deficit now approaching $125 billion. Whether the House moves on that bill in the coming days will tell us a great deal about how seriously Washington intends to escalate the economic side of this pressure campaign. While that channel was opening in Moscow, CENTCOM forces struck two Iranian rocket launchers near Larak Island, ending what had been a month-long lull in direct confrontation. Iran responded with nearly a dozen missiles toward American positions in Jordan. At least 8 were intercepted, and a drone was intercepted approaching UAE waters. More importantly, a Greece-based maritime risk group reported that a South Korean tanker and a Saudi-flagged tanker were struck by projectiles in the southern Strait of Hormuz. That directly contradicts earlier claims from the administration that the waterway had been cleared of mines. The shifting geography of power here is worth sitting with for a moment. The Strait of Hormuz carries roughly 1/5 of global oil consumption. Brent crude has now pushed above $92 a barrel, with WTI near 88, up more than 2% for a second straight day. That is a systemic risk, not a regional skirmish. President Trump has called his intended response very limited, describing Iran as a failed nation with inflation near 350%, a figure that still needs independent verification, but is doing real political work regardless. The strategic calculus here is that this mirrors the 2019-2020 tanker war almost exactly. Oil price volatility without triggering a full conflict. But there's a resource strain underneath it. Ukraine says it needs 5% of America's Patriot interceptor stockpile to survive winter and currently holds about 1%, while consumption in the Iran theater is quietly eating into the same production pipeline, the Pentagon is scrambling to expand from 600 to 2,000 units a year. That's why Italy and other European allies are stepping in with their own systems, rather than waiting on Washington. Now to something that looks almost domestic but carries its own geopolitical weight. At midnight, between August 21st and 22nd, the United States imposed 50% tariffs on a range of Canadian goods, unilaterally, with no renegotiation framework in place, adding roughly 200 more line items to a running total that now exceeds 8,500 tariff changes since this administration began. At almost the same moment, Washington finalized a deal to import 330,000 metric tons of beef from Argentina alongside a $20 billion assistance package to Buenos Aires. More importantly, this is a policy pulling against itself. Analyst Peter Zeihan argues the U.S. needs to roughly double its industrial base to replace Chinese manufacturing capacity, and that alienating Canada and Mexico from that reshoring effort means Washington ends up absorbing their manufacturing volume too, compounding rather than solving the problem. Industrial construction spending has fallen in nearly every month of this administration, which Zeihan reads as business confidence in trade policy simply evaporating. On the agricultural side, four companies already control 85% of U.S. cattle processing, and the Argentina deal reinforces that concentration, even as roughly 63 American farms go bankrupt every day. China, notably, rejected part of that same Argentine beef shipment after detecting a banned antibiotic residue, a food safety wrinkle that undercuts the deal's credibility just as it's being sold domestically. One more thread worth watching sits in the Indo-Pacific, where the debate isn't about ships or missiles, but about sustainment, repair capacity, supply chains, the boring infrastructure of a protracted conflict. The region outside China represents about 23% of global GDP, but only around 5% of global defense production. That mismatch is exactly what the U.S.-led Partnership for Indo-Pacific Industrial Resilience is trying to close, with Australia co-chairing missile co-production lines and forward repair hubs that let damaged equipment get fixed in Brisbane instead of shipped home. It's a quiet signal, but it tells you where planners actually expect the next crisis to be decided. Not on the first day of a conflict, but on the 30th. For the next 48 hours, watch the Strait of Hormuz shipping lanes and Brent crude's trajectory closely. If tanker strikes continue, even as CENTCOM and Iran describe their exchanges as contained, that's the clearest sign the tit-for-tat equilibrium from 2019 is breaking down rather than holding, and it's the fastest-moving variable in this entire briefing. Everything else, from the Ratcliffe Channel to the House sanctions vote, unfolds over days or weeks. Hormuz can move by the hour. Stay vigilant. Until tomorrow. That's your core brief for today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more.